Welcome to We Are the Watchers.
This is episode 441, top of the day to you, Steph.
Top of the day.
You're getting ready to go and see what?
The Lion King musical.
Oh, fun. Yeah. I've never seen it before, have you?
Not the professional one.
Yeah, okay.
I've seen a school version.
Kids do it, yeah, okay. So it should be a little bit different.
Just a little.
You would hope. I knew that the Lion King musical was coming here, but I thought it was months and months away. But having said that, it probably was months and months ago that I heard that.
You had that thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense. I'm not doing a watching suggestion. I refuse.
Golly.
Instead, I will be talking to the author of a book that I've been reading. And I know you want it, but you'll have to have it next, okay? Well, I have finished it, so you can have it once I finish, okay?
Okay.
All right, cool. You got some watching suggestions?
I do.
I've done a theme.
Good. Two movies, same actress.
I like that. I like those themes because those themes also make it fun for you, like for us, when we're like, oh, what should we watch for the week?
Yeah.
And instead of going, oh, what's new, you go, I'm going to pick things from this, you know, director.
Well, mine's always been a little bit more organic that I'll watch one that I don't think I've ever seen.
Okay.
And then maybe it's the algorithm helping me out, but then it'll be another one. Or because I've just seen one with that actress that I go, I didn't know that one was there. I'll watch that one too.
Yeah, there we go.
Did it with Reese.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, watched an older one afterwards. Maybe I'll do that in the next couple of weeks. That'll be fun. All right. I've got a quiz for you at the end. I hope you like Jason Momoa.
I know nothing about him.
Let's see how much of a nothing you'll know. But that's so far away. Right now we need to get into the
watching suggestions. No, that's the wrong thing. I was getting excited.
Fair enough. It
the
was
news.
What we were talking about. Yes. News.
For a visual representation of this audio, check out the Watchers podcast on Instagram.
Okay, see if you can see what made me think about
Jason.
A sequel to a Minecraft movie has gotten a new title.
Minecraft 2?
It's actually better than that. It's one of those ones you go, that's not bad. A Minecraft movie, Squared, because they're all cute. It's good, right?
Yeah,
I like that.
For that.
I've got a lot of time for that
all
one.
For that.
In the Instagram post revealing the name, it said, are you ready for another adventure? The world of Minecraft is expanding once again with a Minecraft movie, Squared.
Cool.
I thought you were going to sneeze, cough, and then you just wiped your eye.
Yeah, I yawned and my eye decided to join
really
in.
That's really annoying. Jason Momoa, Jack Black, Sebastian Hansen, Emma Myers, Danielle Brooks, Jennifer Coolidge, they were all in the original movie. Kirsten Dunst is going to be in the sequel.
She's having a new bit of a revival,
she's
isn't
good.
She?
She was always good back then, and now she's good now.
Always been good.
Was she the young actress in the original Jumanji movie? No. No, it was the girl from Jurassic Park. I was going to try and do like
Are
you a
sure?
link. Was it her? I'll have a look.
I'm going to look faster.
Let's see. We've got a competition. Jumanji original.
It's Kirsten Dunst. Yes.
It is.
It right.
Okay. Well, there's
and
our
I
link.
Won. I got faster.
Oh my gosh, you're so cool.
Thank goodness for predictive text because I was like,
That's good. Speaking of Jason Momoa, Baywatch, the reboot, is continuing to add some original actors to the new season,
is
the new series.
Is this the clue that made you do a quiz for
No,
Jason
it was
Momoa?
It was Minecraft because he's in that. But yes, both of them. I was like, oh, hang on a second. This is definitely something I need to talk about.
Yeah.
But they've got Michael Bergen and Kelly Packard. And you might be going, okay. Now, both of them will play lifeguards as they did back then. Jack J.D. Darius and April Gaminski. Now, these two were in Hobie's when he decided to become a lifeguard when he got older, and they were like, well, you need to do something related to this, otherwise we've got to get rid of you. the actor. So they put him in a rookie class and they were friends in that class. So they're from later seasons. I think season 8 is when they joined it. So you can be forgiven for not knowing who they are, but they're back. And I'm sure everybody will be like, oh, they were the ones in the red.
Mm.
I don't know how popular this is going to be. And the reason is because they're putting a lot of original cast in. They're definitely relying on people who have watched it before, like back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, those people who watched it back in the day will probably watch an episode or two just for nostalgia purposes.
And then
be like, ah, I don't really feel
it. So I feel like they've got to do limited series, as in 3 episodes.
It was like the Beverly Hills 90210, you know, they did the reboot with not just 90210 where they did a new cast, like the one where they had the original cast, and it's just like, I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Okay, 63 years after Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, it's being remade, but into a limited series. Sarah Snook is going to star in it.
Mm.
Hopefully. It sounds pretty good.
Scary.
Yeah.
She's good though.
She's amazing. And she's good at this kind of stuff. So, okay, so this.
Do you know what? I don't know that I've seen The Birds.
I have.
Maybe I have, because I've got images in my head.
We used to watch Rear Window a lot.
I love
that's
Rear
what
Window.
We watched. We were really into that. But this one is set in Snook's, like her character's home state of Alaska, with a murder mystery. That's what's happening. New characters. And, you know, she's in it.
I wonder if they're going to do it really Hitchcocky style.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
But what was really interesting is that I didn't realize that The Birds was based off a short story by, I believe, I'm guessing French because her name is Daphne du Maurier.
I think I knew it was based off a story.
Those short stories, like it was last week I was talking about the Tom Hiddleston one, which was based off a Stephen King short story. So cool.
Do you know what's really good? The short stories, and the book is called Tales of the Unexpected.
Am I
wrong in saying it's Roald Dahl?
I think it is.
They're not children's stories. Mm. And I mean, Roald Dahl's kind of dark. You know, his Revolting
he always
Rhymes
was.
Is dark. But this is a collection of short stories of kind of murder mysteries. There are some great ones in there, and it's only a short book. I would say try and find it if you haven't read it.
Do you think short stories are worth it because of the fact that to be made into movies, because the fact that they're short. Like with the problem with putting a book into a movie is that they have to take stuff out.
I know.
It's a short story.
And in doing that, in taking stuff out, they often change whole plot lines.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Mm. All right, we have no time to talk about this because now it's officially time to talk about
the watching suggestions.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, who's the actress? Who's the actress?
The actress is Kristen Bell.
Oh, we like her.
Is she Kristen or Kirsten? Do you know?
I thought it was Kristen.
Yeah, she's KR, so she's
there
Kristen. All right, so the first one that I watched is not a new movie.
Okay.
It's called Like Father, and it stars herself and Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, yeah.
It's back from 2018.
Oh, okay.
Pretty sure you can find it on Netflix. Comedy, fun. Kristen Bell plays highly strung, work not focused, just work obsessed woman who is left at the altar, at the altar, as in
she's standing there waiting, or she walks down the aisle.
He kind of goes, I can't do this.
Oh, so he is there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's all because I think they were waiting for her to walk down the aisle because she was on a work call.
Oh, my God. Okay, so
and
we
he's
can.
Like,
yeah, right.
This is not going to work.
Yeah.
So she was ready to just jump straight back in to work, and they were like, maybe you need just a little bit of time. So she ends up going on her honeymoon, but not in the way that you would expect. Her estranged father appeared at her wedding ceremony and she saw him leave, and she, you know, amongst being left at the altar and then her estranged father being there and then dashing out the door.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. So they happen to, the night of the wedding, meet up and have a big night together, and they get really, really drunk, and suddenly they're waking up and the car is waiting for her and what would be her husband to take her on a honeymoon.
So she goes to her honeymoon with her estranged father.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Father she hasn't seen in a very, very, very long time.
That's a good premise.
And it's not just a honeymoon that you could, you know, get your own room or travel away, kind of be like, this is not
rooms
working, I'm just going to go. It's on a cruise.
Room. Oh, confined area.
Confined
yeah,
area.
Right.
The cruise is fully booked, so they have to share a room.
God.
You know, you can only get off.
Cabin, you mean?
Yeah. You can only get off at certain ports, so you can't just leave when you want to or need to leave. Anyway, it's really fun, has a lot of the scenes that you could imagine happening. See these two really form a relationship and bond, and they both have this incredible competitive streak that you can tell from her work ethic. That's what she's like.
Right.
But they decide they are going to enter every competition and couples competition and karaoke competition, and it's just a really fun feel-good movie. If you're just wanting something light to watch, it's fun.
That's fun.
There's none of those dumb
over-the-top
scenes.
Sure.
You know, often comedy movies you kind of go,
this would never have happened.
This is a filler and you should have stopped.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. There's none of that. It's just really, really funny. And it has a deeper level to their relationships and their characters that doesn't come out till later on in the movie. So you do feel like they have thought about these characters and not just tried to go for a quick
script. Sure. They've got like a progression through. Yeah. So that's Father, Like Father from 2018 on Netflix.
Yes.
All right. So what is your next
Kristen Bell one?
Yeah.
My next one. I'd never even heard of it.
Yeah.
I wonder if you have.
Okay.
It is from 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So just a few years ago. I found it on Stan, I think, but it may also be on Prime. One or the other. It is called Queen Pins. Yeah. Have you heard of it?
So, I don't think so.
Very funny. Another comedy type one. So Kristen Bell and her best friend JoJo.
Mm-hmm.
I forget Kristen Bell's name only because there's a couple of identities later on. And
oh,
so I can never
right,
remember
okay.
which one she actually
yeah,
is.
Yeah, sure. So it's kind of like Fletch.
So I'll just call her Kristen Bell.
Okay.
So Kristen Bell and her best friend JoJo are living very different lives, but they're next door neighbors. But one thing they've got in common is that they're couponers. You know, like the
you can
extreme
see it in the poster. Yeah. Extreme couponing. That
extreme
was a good
couponing.
Show.
They're both doing it to kind of fill a void in their life. Kristen Bell's husband travels 3 weeks of every month. She's gone through a bit of trauma. So she's just trying to do something that makes her feel productive.
Alive.
You know. She goes and all the cashiers at the supermarket hate her.
I bet they do. It looks like extra work for them.
Yeah, 100%. Because they will ring up everything and they'll say, that's, you know, $200. And she goes, is it?
Oh,
and then hands over this pile of coupons. That
sounds good.
You know, a dollar at a time. And then she has this trademark little sentence that she says to them, you know, if you watch the pennies, the dollars start to count, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing, I'm not getting it right. But they just hate her, you know, they just groan at her. Anyway, they realize, her and JoJo, that there's a little bit more money to be made in couponing if you break the law.
Of course.
Yeah. So they discover that by writing a complaint to a company, they will send you a coupon not for like a dollar off or buy one, get one free, but for a free product.
Okay.
And so they're like, this is money.
Yeah.
This is free money. Would people pay us for our coupons for free stuff? You know, if something cost $40 and we charged you $20 for the coupon. So they quickly discover that that's a fabulous loophole. They go down to Mexico to the printing company where all the coupons are printed. They ring in people to try and help them, and they end up getting the extra coupons that are printed by the printing company that are supposed to be destroyed, but they end up getting them. They then create like a YouTube channel and a website to then advertise this. It is really funny. Some of the characters are just hilariously I guess, unbelievable, but just such a caricature, like a guy who his job is to kind of go around the supermarkets and check their procedures and policies. And he zones in and he's like, there is something.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I can see radar. When there is a problem with the coupon, but these are legit. Dodgy how are radar. They getting with it?
Yeah.
He keeps trying to contact the FBI. Instead of the FBI coming, it's the US Postal Service who get on and they're like, this is mail fraud. Like,
oh,
and you know
so
how
funny.
Serious the US Postal Service are?
I don't know.
Well,
they're very serious. You've seen the movie, you know.
They're very serious. I remember, I'm going to digress for a second, but when I was in Hawaii, I went on a tour around Pearl Harbor and they were talking all about the military and, you know, people who have served and all of that. And there was a guy at the front of the coach who thought he knew more than the tour guide. And so he kind of took over the tour guiding. He was putting himself in line with people who have surfed the country because he was a
postman. Oh, my God, that's brilliant. I love that. That is so good.
I mean, as an Australian, so you just good. Don't – that those two things
no.
just don't align. Anyway, Vince Vaughn appears.
Oh, yeah.
As
oh, he's
the head of the Postal Service.
So funny.
Holy moly, it is so
it's
funny.
A good cast.
When he appears and they want to take down these two suburban women – it's the Postal Service that has like a SWAT team and everything.
Far
and you're
out.
Just killing yourself laughing.
You've had a good week of watching stuff.
Yeah, these two were good movies to yeah. watch when you just go, I finished a series.
Yeah.
I don't really want to start anything
yeah.
heavy. I don't know what
don't
to start.
Don't jump into anything.
Yeah.
yeah.
I think you would love Queen Pins.
Yeah, I think it sounds yeah. great. Okay. My watching suggestion is a reading suggestion and I got a little secret surprise. Well, now that I've kicked Steph away because she's been on her Kristen Bell watching marathon, watching old Kristen Bell movies, whilst I've been reading a brand new book. It's called You Girls Play Nice. KD Alden is the author and I get to chat with you. Good morning.
Good morning. So nice to meet you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for agreeing and also thanks for writing this book. I had so much fun reading it. It was so much, oh gosh. I think I sent like a few little ideas of what I wanted to chat with you about and I was like, there were so many parts in the book where I was like, oh, why didn't I think of that beforehand? Oh, that was a fun little twist. Oh, of course they went that way. I didn't even think about it. And I started doing that thing that we all do, right? When you read these kind of murder mystery books, the whodunits, where you're like, I'm going to try and preempt everything the author has already thought about. And you always get it wrong. But it's part of the fun, right?
Too.
Yeah.
And when you're watching something on TV or whatever, I mean, I pause so that I can then tell somebody. I know who did this.
So you can get in. Because if you say it afterwards, right, if you say, oh, I guessed that before, you're like, you gave me no proof.
No.
So many twists and turns. I always want to know, when you're writing it, you've obviously, I'm guessing, I don't know, you can tell me, but you've organized the plot points ahead of time, or are you just sort of writing and going and the spoiler's coming into your head, the twist is happening straight
yeah.
away. Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's that?
I'm going wild.
That's
yeah,
so
I
fun.
I kind of have no idea with these crime thrillers where it's going to go. When I wrote the first one, Sister Butcher Sister, there were three sisters and there was a killer. And then, you know, it was a matter of who did it. And I didn't know myself until the last chapter. And the same things happened with You Girls Play Nice. So I kind of had this idea, all right, I know it's going to be about feminine rage and revenge because
yeah.
that was kind of what people seem to pick up with the first one and I like writing it. And so I kind of have this bit of an idea, but then I just have the characters. And I don't know if they get in my head or I get in their heads or specifically how it works by this osmosis, but together we kind of just meander through. And if I've got the characters really, really down pat, then they kind of tell me where we're going. And I just kind of, I sort of plot in reverse, if you like. So I've gone somewhere and sometimes I will paint myself into a corner and can't get out.
Okay.
But then I just have to cut that and leave it somewhere.
Yeah, sure.
But But most of the time, I'm just going along with the characters, and then suddenly I'll realize what's going to happen, and then I may get one step ahead. I might think, well, if this happens, maybe I can do that, but I don't really do it until I get there. So I think we call it, you've probably heard this term a lot, that writers either say they're a plotter or a pantser. And I'm a pantser now, which means that I'm just writing by the seat of my pants, whereas I used to be a plotter. I much prefer this way.
Oh, gosh, it would be fun. It's almost like you're reading the book as you type the words out. Yeah, amazing. Yeah,
exactly. And also because my memory's so bad, I tend to forget even, you know, I've got to go back and read it to see what happened.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because it's not plotted out. So, yeah, you've had these amazing little moments where you've gone, oh, this is a great idea, and enjoyed the fact that that's happened. I my brain would work the same way. I'd be like, oh, I think I need to go back and have a look at that. I guess we should probably just give a quick little synopsis about what You Girls Play Nice is about. So there are four, well, there are currently four friends who have been friends for a very long time, like teenage sort
Since
of.
Primary school. Really.
Primary school, yeah, right. And it is the third anniversary of one of their, the fifth friend's.
Anniversary of the fifth friend.
Right, okay, yeah. Having endured this horrendous murder, and we know straight away who they all think it is. There's been a court, like this has already happened. It's gone through court. We've seen the very last moment of that court case, and we're like, oh, now we're outraged with the result, like the four friends are. And then it just goes a bit exciting.
Yeah. So basically they've gotten together to sort of celebrate what would have been the dead girl Helen's 30th birthday. And that's when they've started just coming up with all these crazy ideas. It started like we all often do. Oh, you know, if I could get my hands on that guy,
for sure.
You know, what I would do to him and blah, blah, blah. And then it becomes a little bit more serious. And then it's fair to say that it's not too long before somebody gets wind of what they're doing. These are just like little private presentations they have between each other, and they're sort of researching and presenting, and there's a fair bit of humour involved there at the early stages, but then carnage ensues.
Oh, it's so fun when suddenly there's a slight inkling that maybe something bad is happening. Like, oh, okay. Unfortunately, that meant I stayed up a little bit late that one night, just getting through that a little bit. You know, you're just like, one more page, just do two more pages. How long did it take you to write this novel?
Well, look, it was relatively quick, and I think this is what, to be perfectly honest, this is what happens when you've got a contract already. So I got a two-book deal. And the first book took me years and years to write, and then, you know, and then it just sat for a long, long time. But once they wanted that one and they liked it and actually loved it, and then they said two-book deal. So I kind of very hastily went into the second one, which I had sort of written a fair bit about. But when I sent them the synopsis, and I was probably, you know, 80% through, and I sent them the synopsis and they went, it was not as feminine-centric, I guess, as the first one, and that was really what they wanted. Obviously, that's what the readers want at this time as well, and so I could totally see it. But then, so because I'd had to backpedal and start again, it was amazing how fast I actually could do it. And I think, I reckon it was probably only 6 to 12 months between when I started and the final draft. And of course we always say, oh, that's it, that's the final draft, but it's never quite final. There's final number two and final number 20, and you know, it just goes on. But to where I thought it was sort of finished, that was it. It was maybe about 8 months, I suppose, which is really, really short time frame for me.
That's incredible. Because I would think this kind of, you know, there's a lot in here. There's a lot of different characters, and you're writing chapters by their perspectives. And I would think to get your head around, okay, the next chapter, now I'm going to suddenly go into, you know, Rebel or Sue's perspective. Now I've got to switch over. I would think sometimes you'd be like, I'm actually not writing Sue. This is Willow. I've got to get rid of this and start again.
Yeah, well, that does sort of happen too. And like I said, with the characters kind of living in my head, sometimes I would want to keep going with one character. And there's one in particular that I was just sort of almost in love with, and I just wanted, you know, to be with her most of the time. And then somebody would interrupt one of the other characters, and I think, yeah, I've got to get to their perspective now. And so I would just sort of put, you know, and then this will happen and that happened, maybe. And then I'd go back and do the next person's perspective, because otherwise I would have ended up with a totally different story. And I really wanted it from all of those different points of view, because that's when the secrets kind of work really well, the secrets and the loyalties that you have towards your friends and that sort of thing, and how tested that can get. Because I wanted to make the friendship group, including Helen, who sort of came into the group a bit later,
yeah,
I wanted to make them all, you know, really good friends. But then even when you do have a really good friendship group like that, there's sometimes where, you know, you really just sort of inwardly roll your eyes about somebody, or, you know, wish they'd have done something different. And you do have things that you withhold this from this one, but maybe you would share it with that one for whatever reason. So that I kind of wanted to make it about secrets as well.
And that's a really common way that females approach their friendship groups, you know, through school and afterwards as well. It's exactly that. Like, there's a couple bits where it's revealed, some of those little secrets are almost revealed offhandedly, which I thought was really good, because I was like, should I pick up on that? Oh,
yeah.
I don't know. I'll bank that for later. But it's true. You know, you might have something with friend number one and you're like, but friend number three would not agree with what we did. But at the time, agreed with that and we decided to do it, and we still stand by it. You know, we're 30 years old. This is how we're stand buying it now. And that's just female friendship. So I think I personally thought that you tackled that perfectly. They felt real. The friendship dynamics felt real as well.
Yeah. Oh, I'm really glad about that, because, you know, you do kind of feel like, even though I say that there's those five characters, and there's also me. I'm kind of in there somehow.
Sure,
you know?
Of course.
And so I feel like I'm friends with each one as well. And I can totally relate to what you're saying there, because there would be, you know, there'd be something that there's no way I would tell Willow, because she's too soft.
Yeah.
And, you know, she would sort of freak out if I told her that that's how my mind was working, whereas I could say it to Rebel, for example.
She wouldn't care. She'd just accept it. Yeah, totally. I also thought, I'm still thinking about this. I haven't quite formed this thought through properly, but last year I read Ritual by Chloe Elizabeth Wilson, and that was also set in Melbourne, and it was all about females, and there was a weird sort of quirky connection between them, but it was set in Melbourne as well, and I almost felt that the city itself was a little bit the extra character, and I kind of felt that in this one, in your novel as well. And I wondered if there's something about Melbourne that has that kind of cool quirkiness, maybe a bit dangerous, we're not sure. Is that something that you consciously have written, or is that subconscious because you live there?
No, I think I have consciously done it, and in fact, when I was writing this, I wasn't in Melbourne.
Oh, really?
But, you know, Melbourne does have a real place in my heart. So I was in fact, I think I was probably in Ireland for a lot of the time that I was writing. But yes, Melbourne does have that. It reminds me of Edinburgh in a way. You know, Edinburgh is much older in terms of the white settlement, you know, westernised thing. But
sure.
But Melbourne is like that, in that sometimes I'm walking through the city and I just can't help like putting my hand up against the bricks. You know, they're dark, they're kind of mysterious. There's lots of little dark corners.
Yes.
You've got the graffiti alleys and all of that sort of thing. So, yeah, there's a kind of real grittiness about Melbourne that I really, really love. Whereabouts are you, Sydney?
Yeah, I'm in Sydney, but, you know, obviously as someone who lives in, at least the east side of Australia, you visit Melbourne often. It's a normal thing. I think most people from way up in Queensland downward, it's, you know, Melbourne is such a great weekend destination where you go and do all of that stuff. You go to the gritty parts because you want to see something interesting. There's always something quirky and interesting in every suburb that you can, you know, grab a tram or whatever to. And so when reading your book, I was just like, I've got that feeling that chapter where it was pouring rain. I'm like, yeah, but you still go out. You still go out and do stuff, because if you don't, you've missed it. Kind of like I'm guessing, you know, Edinburgh as well, you know, most of the UK and Ireland. If you think the rain's going to put you off, you're going to miss out on doing anything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, here you've just got to be ready to go out. You know, I always have my backpack, and in there is a rain jacket, and in the side is an umbrella, and then there's something for warm and that I can peel off. It's just like four in a day.
Oh, that's the saying, isn't it? Melbourne, four seasons in one day. Yeah.
But I do think Melbourne really does lend itself to that kind of crime writing. And I'm just trying to actually think of one. There was a book I read a long time ago. It was a Catherine Kovacic book. Oh, which reminds me, I've written down that one that you just mentioned, Ritual. Is that the one that's to do with makeup or apartments?
Yes, it's a makeup track. Yeah, it's so weird. Like the whole time you're like, these people are weird, but you love it. You can't stop reading. You're like, why are they all, what? Why? You just can't stop. But Melbourne is so, it's. Same feeling.
Yeah, someone else told me about it, so I will definitely read it.
Yeah, worth a read.
Catherine Kovacic's books, I think she might actually live in Melbourne. I'm not 100% sure, but I remember years and years ago I read one that she had written. It was like a fictional account of a real historical event, but it was set in the 30s as well as modern day.
Oh, that sounds good.
And it was it's the portrait of Molly Dean, or something to do with Molly Dean.
That sounds good.
And then she wrote another one, Painting in the Shadows, and both of those were, well, not only set in Melbourne but also set in the art scene. Sorry, I'm getting carried away now.
No, this is good. This is good. I'm literally looking it up as we speak.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And I think they might be reasonably oldish, but they've obviously stuck in my mind for that very reason, for how she portrayed Melbourne and how Melbourne was sort of did seem like another character. And they both of those books were set in the art scene. And so then a more recent one is The Canvas Killings by Elise James.
Okay, Canvas Killings.
It really seems to fly under the radar, and I think it's because it's a very small publisher.
Oh, okay.
But it, again, magnificent depictions of Melbourne, and it also is set in the art scene, so it's probably saying more about me than it is about these books. That's what I particularly love. My husband is sort of like an amateur artist, so I kind of get caught up in that whole world, and art features quite a bit in various books. And Helen, in fact, is an artist.
That's it. That's it. All right, so you've given me two reading suggestions. I've got the browsers open. I'm not closing them until I properly put them into my list of books I want to read. But because we do a lot of watching suggestions, watch stuff all the time, I'm wondering, what are you watching at the moment?
Okay, well, what I was going to say about those crime books too is that when I'm in the throes of a manuscript, I usually won't read or watch crime. Because there's this thing about I need some softness, you know, so I'll read poetry or I'll look at sort of lighter things on TV. But I was in between, so that's when I had read Elise James's book, but also then I did a bit of Netflix catching up. And the one that I really enjoyed really recently was Apex. Have you seen that?
Yes, how good is it?
Oh, it's so scary. And, I mean, Charlize Theron is a fantastic actor, but the guy, I can't remember his name, it's something like Egerton or something, because at one point I thought, is he related to
To Joel. Egerton? Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah.
Just had a bit of a look about him as well, but he's a Welsh actor, I think.
That's incredible, because he nailed that accent.
Oh, he was so menacing too, wasn't he? It was really understated. And I remember actually taking a few notes when I watched it because I was thinking about how you get that evilness to come through without actually telling. And even though, yes, you can see on the screen, but they still didn't overdo it. You were just picking this up yourself. He could equally have been, you know, a very mild-mannered, helpful man, which he sort of appeared at the start.
Exactly.
But, oh, he was just incredible. And, yeah, so I did watch that, and I watched another one called The Crash, which was a documentary about, and that was fairly recent, about a girl in America somewhere, and she crashed her car with her boyfriend and friend in the car. The two young men died and she was severely injured, but then she was charged with murder. So I won't
intentional.
Sort of go into
it. Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, but it was fantastic. Fantastic. But then if I can go off the crime for a minute, what I did watch, and I can't stop thinking about it because I only watched it on catch-up TV the other day on ABC iView, it was an Australian story about Rachel Ward, Rachel Ward.
Yeah, the actress.
And it was called Regeneration.
Yeah,
and
right.
I wanted to watch it. I desperately wanted to watch it because I saw how she had been trolled so badly because of her very normal appearance for a woman of her age, but because she wasn't, you know, she hadn't had surgery or she didn't bother to go to all of this trouble to sit in front of a makeup mirror, she really, really copped it. And when I saw Regeneration, I thought that was going to be what it was about. Well, it was mentioned, but what it was actually about was her passion for regenerative farming. And she all that trolling gave her all of these new followers. And she kind of used that platform then very smartly, still looking as gorgeous as she does very naturally, and just explaining the beauty of regenerative farming and that. So that was really cool to watch. I really enjoyed it.
It's a bit of a twist.
Yeah. And Kylie. I watched the Kylie documentary.
Oh, how's that? Because I was going to watch that tonight. Oh, who isn't, you know?
I am Kylie fan. I wanted more. I wanted it to get more gritty and all of that, and especially when, you know, we have the sections on Michael Hutchins and all of that. And so there may have been some superficiality to some parts, but I guess they have to do that because, you know, they can't sort of tell you everything, but it would be nice.
Yeah, maybe we'll find out in another one. I suspect Kylie's one of those massive stars that there's going to be so many docos about over her career. Yeah. Have you ever seen her live?
No, I haven't, no. I reckon it'd be great, though.
I saw her once. It was, I can't even remember where it was. It was a big stadium. We got seats way up, you know, way up the back, the nosebleed section. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. She sang every song you wanted to hear. She sang especially for you, and the audience was Jason Donovan. So we sang all the Jason parts. Oh, my God, it was so good. It was so fun. So if you get the chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely grab.
She's a real entertainer, isn't she?
She's
just amazing.
She's one of those one of a kinds. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For
so
sure.
So did you say you haven't watched the doco yet?
No, I want to watch it tonight. So now you've actually you've gotten me ready. I'm primed. I might spend the morning doing some housework, listening to Spinning Around, and maybe some.
Yeah.
What was the grittier album, the 90s one, the Impossible Print? Impossible Princess.
Oh, yes, and there was some work with Nick Cave.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was about that time.
All around that era. That might be a bit of fun. I haven't listened to that for ages. Yeah. Anyway, it's because I finished the book and I don't know what to do with myself, so I have to do housework. KD Alden, thank you so much for not only coming onto the podcast, but for writing this book, You Girls Play Nice. I would say we've got a long weekend coming up. Buy this book, refuse to see anyone, and just read it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, it's time for this quiz. It's Jason Momoa.
Okay.
I'm going to do a couple of synopsises and then a few little quizzes about him, like some questions,
okay,
right?
Okay, okay.
This follows the professional and personal lives of lifeguards patrolling the crowded beaches of California, Los Angeles, California, and then later Hawaii.
It's Baywatch.
Yes. Okay. Four misfits are suddenly pulled into a mysterious portal into a bizarre cubic wonderland that thrives on imagination.
Minecraft?
Yes.
Lucky I was listening earlier.
Man, we're getting through these. What country was Aquaman filmed?
Australia?
Yes. Do you want to guess whereabouts?
Great Barrier Reef.
Gold Coast.
Oh, I'm giving myself that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What famous board game franchise has a Game of Thrones edition? It's downstairs.
Risk.
Yes. Who's his stepdaughter?
Lisa.
Yes.
Benet.
No, not that one.
Not the little girl.
Yeah.
Lisa. Big Little Lies. Cosby Show Connection.
Zoe
Kravitz.
Yes, good, good. Finally, how old is Jason Momoa?
54.
He's only 46.
He's only 46.
Born on the 1st of August, 1979. That's well, I mean, yeah.
Get out He's of older. Town.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
That's hilarious.
Look, that was a speed Jason Momoa round, but I felt you went very well.
Went really,
really
well.
Really, really well.
I didn't
right?
let myself think.
No, it worked. It was brilliant. All right. On that note, Stephanie, thank you very much.
You're welcome.